Hey, you know, everybody loves to go out to eat, but do you ever think what's happening behind the kitchen doors? How are they preparing that food? How are they putting together the food and the drinks and the fun? What kind of thought goes into it? And today we're going to talk about the people who helped design that and create those magical playgrounds we call kitchens with the man who's played in one for most of his life here, Chef Pascal.
Yeah, we're going to talk even more deeply into what's going on in the kitchen, before you can operate.
When you started 100 million years ago, back as a kid.
I want to still feel young.
Okay. When you were serving Brigitte Bardot back in the day. And Saint-Tropez, the kitchen wasn't that complicated. It was a stove and it was a few other pieces of equipment. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a lot of equipment.
Things changed a lot.
Yeah.
And it's like everything else, evolution. And and then the demand and the chef menus change, and you have to adapt, you have to have new onion, you have productivity.
Right.
Especially when you work for a corporation or
a resort or something,
a large restaurant. But even smaller restaurants, you need to have the right equipment. And this is what my friend Wendy, do for a living.
For a living. They're the people that put together these magical playgrounds now and bring all this cool equipment together.
And so I have a few questions for them to see how people can know about
let them each identify who they are and what they do.
All right. I'm Dan Klobowski. I'm with the Fisher Group out of Orange County, California. We're one of the rep groups. There's maybe about seven of us. So we are professionals with the manufacturers, and we support them in different ways. We have we have 25 manufacturers, anywhere from, American Range. We have ePro.
When you say manufacturer, you mean brands.
These are brands.
Yeah. These are kitchen equipment brands.
Goes
in the back of the house here, and you're one of the half a dozen ref groups out there that goes out. You must have an incredibly cool test kitchen or showroom that people can see all these cutting-edge stuff here.
I do. Over in Orange, California, they have built an incredible test kitchen for us at... I'll even give you the address. It's 1636 North Orange
Avenue
and North Orange Street in Orange. And
if you can come
to that test kitchen, just let us know you're coming. Don't just drop in.
If you go there, you have to come with a business plan.
Well, you should.
They don't want you to
walk in. It really makes it easy. But we have everything from, we got donut machines from Belsha in there. We got growing equipment in there. We have a lot of Electrolux professional equipment, as like I saw in your office. You got Frigidaire. That's part of the family as well. It just goes on and on. Beverage machines, cold beverage, hot beverage, frozen beverage. It's a playground. Just yesterday, we had a group come in, a very famous chain here in Orange County, and all they kept saying is, you are the luckiest person in the world.
You got everything.
With everything that you have here.
But it doesn't mean you bring dinner home.
No. I have been.
But also, do you still have that beautiful trailer truck or...
We do. We have a mobile test kitchen, So we still have that. That mobile test kitchen has been, in front of me for the last 9 years. So for the last 3 years, it's been with Fisher Group, and we load that thing up. It's very modular, so we can load equipment in, take equipment out, so it's ever-changing. And wherever we might need to go in Orange County, L.A., Santa Barbara, San Diego, even Las Vegas, we'll take that unit out there so we can show the end users. And the end users are usually big chains. Like in Las Vegas, we have almost every hotel. We have a gentleman out there that works for us named Jeff Moore. He can put us in front of almost any chef, any buyer, and
now, we have a Saddleback College now.
Yeah.
We have a kitchen, it's all electric. So the mobile truck is all electric as well?
So the mobile test kitchen is both. We've been doing a lot of work with electric, as Wendy's been doing work with electric with her employer, or her where she's retired from now. But
she's too young to be retired.
I know. Yes. We all think the same thing. But the mobile test kitchen does have power for 208 single volt, single volt, or single phase. Then we have gas power as well on it. But I like to run electric on it because it really shows some of the stuff we can do. And when we bring electric to people, they get super excited about it because a lot of the electric equipment is ventless. And a lot of people in the industry are going ventless.
You know, it's not because it's clean energy. It's keep your kitchen clean.
Absolutely.
And you don't have to put a vent in, which is a lot of money. You got to run it through the roof, and you got to put scrapers and scrubbers and other things on the top for the air quality. All right, Chef, we got to get you to lean a little bit closer. You're leaning back. You're a little too relaxed today.
Yeah, and some of the key, some of the key players out there in the ventless industry that are doing a absolute famous job is, you know, the Hatco industry. They have so many ventless items. They have another brand that's called Oventions. Oventions is out there with, you know, several. I have several different items from Ovention that are ventless, that can cook anything from frozen to a finished good or thawed to a finished good, but can give you every aspect, pieces in 2.5 minutes. Pretty amazing.
20 years ago, in the 80s and 90s, I owned a couple of bars and restaurants. We started off as just bars. They were called Kelly McHugh's. And people quickly said, we got to do food. I don't know why we didn't think of that. We thought it was just a bar. We took over one originally. It was mostly just a bar. And the food was nothing. It was just, you know, cold sandwiches in the back or something, pub grub. And somebody came to us, I don't remember the brand, with one of these ventless fryer kind of things.
Right.
And it was, I don't know how it worked, but we put stuff in it. We could do pizza. We could do French fries. We could do all the stuff. We didn't have to have a grease trap. We didn't have to have a deep fryer in oil and the vent that we would have had to punch a hole through the roof and do all the other stuff. And it tasted indistinguishable.
Was that not the beginning of air frying?
I think it might have been what it was or something here.
So air frying is one way of looking at it. A lot of it is impinged air and just the airflow.
You're talking into the mic here. So the management, you're getting excited like Chef.
Yeah, right? I do. The management of airflow is what is the key to any of these operations. Yeah. Like when we're in that electric genre, when you're saying air frying, those are basically fans that are pushing compared to impinged air, which is you can really control that impinged air from like 10 miles an hour to 60 miles an hour in the way that it cooks on that item. So that airflow is what gives you that crisping and that look and feel like it's been done.
That's a step above convection.
Yes, I would definitely say it's a step above.
Now, how do you feel as a chef? This is what I wanted to learn about, because my impression is the chefs I've known, the few I've known, the real chefs like you, it's got to be gas. It's got to be a flame. I got to be able to control it. I got to be able to do something with it.
It's like everything else. You need to learn.
Okay.
And Wendy and Dan, they come in the kitchen to teach you how to use the equipment as much as possible, because these things we don't know yet, how to use, you know, some of the ovens. And so we need training.
Right.
You know, it's like everything else.
Okay, you know? Can I throw something at Wendy?
Please,
because Wendy has a lot of experience like in a theme park environment, and she gets to work with a lot of great chefs, but not all of those people in that environment get to go out into, I'm going to say, the real world, or go out and experience other things that are going on, other equipment that's available to them.
They learn to cook in some environment.
And that's where they stay. Right. And then what Wendy did in her role was bring those new pieces in to them so they could start experimenting
with
them.
Were they open to it, or were they resistant to it?
Well, here's one thing. Sometimes you have to start with your box, right? What is your box, and what are your limitations? And sometimes your
box meaning the room or
the room, the space that you're building your kitchen or your
physical
environment. Yes. So what is it? Is it a quick service? Is it a table service? Is it a bar?
I was going to ask you. Okay, I want you to build up my next restaurant kitchen, or even the front, you know, a coffee station. But are you doing like consulting and say you want to know my menu, you want to know the volume, you want to know my expectation, and you know how much
customer profile,
how much staff I need in a kitchen? Is that thing that you go into the equation?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You need to know what your expectation is so that you can build to it. and you can concept it. So, you know, what do you want to have? Do you want to have pub food and drink?
Yeah.
And or do you want to have an elegant table service with elegant drinks? Where's the storage for your wine? Where's the storage for your alcohol? You know, in California, we have...
You stick it on top of the refrigerator in the back. That's
yeah.
What we're doing.
Yeah. In California, we have a lot of rules. So, and, you know, your alcohol needs to be locked up. So do you have space for that? So
we
identifying
take the employee
space.
Changing rooms and we jam it all in there. Once we get approved, we fill it up with
all... Or you're fired.
So yeah. Those are the kinds of things that I kind of think of. What are the compartments that you need in order to build your concept or your dream?
And at one point, you have to listen to all of that, and then you can talk, what's your budget?
Right. What's your budget?
Yeah.
Or what are the facility limitations? You know, is your facility, you know, gas and electric? Is it both?
Yeah.
What do you want to do? How do you want to be efficient? Do you have event? If you don't have an event, your budget could blow that that concept right out the window.
Events were incredibly expensive. I think they've only gone up. What's it cost to put a hood and a ventilation system and punch through the roof, and then you have to have, don't you have to have air quality?
Okay. It depends on the size of your cooking line.
Well, I can help. I'll share with you on that one real quick. So it depends on the quality of the unit going in, first of all. You can go from a low end to a high end. We have a very high end vent. It's used in a lot of the major chains because it needs to last them throughout the decades that that a chain will be there.
Because it's a big investment once you put it in.
But it's going to be anywhere from about $2,500 a foot to about $3,500 a foot.
And a typical cook line is how many feet? 10, 15, 20? 10 feet?
10,
yeah.
10 to 20?
Yeah. So 10 times 3,500 or 35 grand, 45 grand, you get 40, 50, 60 grand just putting that silly hood in.
Yeah, easily.
On 10 feet, you have only maximum 12 burners, or you have 6 burners plus an oven, so a double oven, that's pretty much it, you know? So.
And I'm not trying to scare anybody out of like doing this, but you can get down into that for probably a 1500 range. But it's the vent is that hood space is your most valuable space. So sometimes I'll see just a table or a storage unit sitting under a vent, and I'm like, why are you wasting that valuable space? Because you need that room for something else more productive.
Yeah,
always.
And you don't want your staff to get too hot in the kitchen. You know, it's very important, the comfort there.
Well, that's part of it, and then you got to get all the fumes up. But in California, you have all sorts of air quality rules and stuff here. You can't just punch a hole and start. I see people sometimes think they can do that. Little ethnic restaurants I go through, and they're just cooking in the back on an old-fashioned barbecue or something here.
But for me, the key of a... Well, you're going to answer that, I'm sure. It's... the layout of a kitchen. You know, this kitchen layout, they're doing great, but that kitchen layout is terrible, and you can't work. You can't really produce.
Are there still designed? We used, I don't know who we did, this is 20, 30 years ago, but somebody recommended, we didn't have much money, but we put some money into a kitchen designer, because otherwise it wouldn't flow. There would be a bottleneck constantly. It would be too much stuff or too little stuff.
I would say, I would add one more word, professional kitchen designer.
Yes, professional kitchen.
Yep.
So that's who brought us the equipment. They told us to go to various equipment manufacturers based on this what they spec'd out for us here. Is that still the case? Do you get referred in, or do you go directly and work with the new restaurateur and be the professional kitchen designer?
As for me, it's going to be both. So we have a team, we have a sales team that works directly with the kitchen designer, and the manufacturers, regionals will come in, and they'll go have meetings, and they'll share equipment pieces. But for me, I'm typically with the end user, and the end user being going into R&D, into testing, now that a lot of these established brands that are still making changes because they're evolving because the labor market has changed, and now we got to evolve our equipment to change to fit what we have. Like when you had said that some of the mom and pop stores are just cooking on whatever they have and just throwing stuff back there. Yeah. But it's actually some of the mom and pop stores that I work with. Once we get in and show them the evolution and change, we have what's called a combi oven. We're putting double stack combi ovens in them because instead of having nine people what they were used to having in that kitchen, they're now running that kitchen with 4 to 5 people.
Wow.
So because of the changes that they can make and not needing so much equipment much labor.
Whatever it was, you've all figured out, it was something like a convection oven or an air fryer in the early days. We didn't really have a kitchen. We didn't have a cook. We had waitresses and bartenders that would just throw it in there and turn it on and bring it out. We didn't really have to hire a kitchen staff that would otherwise sit there and do not a lot waiting for an order of French fries or burgers or pizza or whatever it was we were throwing.
The flow of a kitchen is essential in your business. If you do not have a proper flow of your kitchen, you waste time, you waste labor, and you have cross traffic, and you could even have accidents. So from a safety perspective, it's essential to have good flow where you have your cook line, and then that's where your cook line is cooking, and then you have your assembly, and then you're finishing.
And you have, dare I say the hard word, pissed off customers here because it takes too long to get it out. It comes out wrong, comes out cold.
Well, it comes down to money.
Yeah.
Because if you're not efficient in the kitchen, you are not going to turn those tables. Yeah. You are not going to get the efficiencies out the front door that you want. So if you do not have an efficient kitchen, it is not going to flow through the front. Mm-hmm. And the front has to work with the heart. Yeah. So the heart of the house and the front of the house have to work together in order to have that kind of nice ebb and flow. So if the kitchen's not flowing well and the front of the house is waiting on the kitchen, you're not getting the meal out to the customer fast enough.
So, yes, and let's see, I want to ask you, and I'm talking about this for maybe some want to be restaurant owners, some chefs that may be listening to the podcast. Should they approach you first or approach the architect, and the architect is going to work with you? Because, you know, you have to have the mechanical plan, electricity,
right.
mm-hmm. plumbing, all this. So what's the first step?
I'll let her answer that.
That's a good question.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think a lot of it starts with your concept. So what is your concept? What is your budget? And then we've always worked with a kitchen designer because they are supposed to be the experts. And then you work and negotiate with them. And then those kitchen designers should be working with the rep groups and bringing in the rep groups with the piece of equipment that you're trying to execute this type of dish.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is the best type of equipment to execute this type of dish? And that's when you should be working with the kitchen designer to help you bring in these rep groups to help you say, oh, there's this great piece of equipment that they know how to.
And I know really depends if it's in a bar or anything like that, like we talked earlier about panini grill. So some panini grill, you can use them in a bar without a hood. Some you do, but the air department say, oh, no, it's a touchy thing. You know, we need to have a hood because you can have smoke and things like that. But there is an option, no?
Well,
for everything you make, there's an option.
Yeah,
there is. But there's also a risk, and Dan can probably highlight
mean
this
like
a little
risk,
bit.
Risk for people running
like
into each other, burning
too
each
much,
other. Or?
Too much grease or fumes coming into the restaurant. You know, health department might come in and say, you're going to need to do something. You need a hood in this area. Yeah. Or you have too much equipment running and you're creating too much.
So I'm going to go back to the early days. So I'm going to roll us back to the 80s. A young dashing entrepreneur named Chef Pascal arrives in town and says, I can do better than this. The sleepy suburbs need something real. Come on. And let's make Pascal's. You didn't hire a kitchen consultant and all that. You rented a space and you designed
it
yourself.
I'm French, so I did believe I knew everything.
Did you hire maybe you have some kind of architect, because you had to submit to the city your mechanical, yeah, electric. Yeah. But beyond that, the kitchen, this is my baby. I know what I want. Get this, get that.
Mm-hmm. The thing is, except one location, most of the location I took over a space that was already
existing.
So there was
existing.
Stuff there.
There's a lot of legwork being done before.
Right.
Okay, the plumbing, electrical.
The hood, yeah. You're stuck with whatever they've stuck in.
Yeah, and so, and from that, you modify to your needs. And that's what...
So I guess my point is it changed? I know, what's the average cost of a starter for 5,000 square foot space? $500,000 now or something?
So I can go ahead and answer that. $3,000 to $5,000, I bought my restaurant when I was 23 years old, 5,500 square feet, but just like yours, fully established with everything in it, ready to go. Mm-hmm. I didn't need every piece that was in there. Right. And being that you knew what you needed to do something, like today, you know what to do. We love working with chefs and the architects at the same time.
Yes.
Because that way you know what the menu is going to be, and then you know how to drive the equipment package that you're looking for. Like I was saying, my equipment package, I sold 4 to 5 major pieces right off the back, mm-hmm, which I didn't need. Yeah. And I just used them as capital to continue running
but
the business.
In those days, you could build a kitchen 20, 30 years ago for 20 grand.
Nah, it's 500 grand still.
Yeah. 500 grand to build a kitchen.
Right? In the 80s. Yeah. 1988, 500 grand.
Right.
Mm-hmm. To build a 5,500 square foot. Now, a bar might be different because you didn't have all the bar food.
We cheated on some of it, but that shocked us. We weren't prepared for that kind of event. That was our biggest chunk of our investment, was the back end, the kitchen. And we're thinking that's not even the biggest part of our business.
That gave me an idea, sir. Can you equip food truck?
Yes, absolutely.
Because that's the
new wave.
The business. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's still expensive. You're mobile. You can go anywhere. You can go to your customer. Your customer can come to you. They can find you. Everything is different today than what it was in the 80s. Yeah. Because, you know, the marketing aspect is Instagram or TikTok, right, whatever it might be. You can drive your own business. Back then, we had the penny saver or, you know, a flyer that went out. And you were hoping that the honey
literally went door-to-door flyer.
You're putting them on cars.
Newsletter, almost Android.
Or you're sponsoring teams and hoping that they would come in and be a part of your environment. Just like with your bar and your pub.
We did that, absolutely.
Adult softball teams, I'm sure.
Right.
And that was how you generated your business. Today, it's very different in the way that one item can be TikToked or Instagram, and that becomes like everybody's favorite. One of the things with Wendy and where she's from, I'd say, is it Instagrammable? And if it's Instagrammable, yes, that just creates the queue in the lineup.
I mean, Instagram and all those social media has changed food and beverage completely.
Mm-hmm. Oh, how so?
Yes.
How so?
It changed me.
Yeah.
So definitely, because the audience is there. You reach out to the audience and they wait to have something new. And
Do chefs then take you behind the kitchen door and show you the equipment and show you the making stuff? Or is it still just the black box, the mystery where the stuff comes from? I have no idea what's back there. Mm. What do you think of that?
Is that my question?
That's more you.
Oh.
Should they be exploring? Should I be touting that I have this cool stuff? Should I be showing you the cool stuff? Or is that just how I'm efficiently delivering the food and I don't want you to know that I don't have...
Or are you showing the magic?
Depend also.
I'm going to take that one real quick. There's
also some trends. Like slowing down now, but now it's kind of everyday thing. Everybody, chef, were doing sous vide.
Doing what?
Sous vide.
I don't even know what that is.
I mean, it's a slow cook in a...
Oh, okay, yes.
In a vacuum.
Right. And so they want to emphasize that we're slow cooking. We're part of that slow cooking
movement.
Yeah,
so you have some special equipment for that as well, but you need training.
All right, so he's going to tout it now. So you're selling me $500,000 of cool gear.
Yeah.
And I put it all in, and maybe it's because I can do something, or maybe because it cut my cost. Should I be telling the world the magic, or should I keep that a secret?
I think you should show the world the magic, because I can give you two quick examples. There's a company called Belsha Automatic. They make what is called a donut robot. The unit is probably about 40 years old.
Okay.
And it's still significant. We just had somebody in Indian Wells out in the desert open.
Upscale neighborhood, yeah.
It's called Havsie's Donuts, and she has her Bell Shot automatic donut robot right in the window where the kids can see what's going on. The magic's happening right there in front of them, and they can see it. And
the robot's the same thing. Magic, right.
Now, Disney has the same machine, and it's hidden behind a wall. Yeah. And the magic comes out in the amazing donut that they serve. So it's two different approaches.
They make falafel, too.
What?
Falafels.
The falafels?
Falafels. Same.
With a robot? Way.
Yeah.
Pretty much. They spit it out? They have legs. But,
there's a submerger for that. Yeah. So it drops in, it submerges, and it pulls underneath, turns it round, and gives it.
It's amazing.
I'm thinking of I haven't been to it, but I always wanted to check it out. What's the Tesla restaurant up in West L.A.? It's a burger place that's supposed to be their concept thing. They might open more of them. Tesla.
It's Tesla's.
And they have robots.
It's a charging place.
And you watch the robot make the food, and the robot serves you the food, and then you can charge your car while you're there and all that. And it's supposed to be like a 50s diner filled with robots.
I know of it. I know the chef that started it. He is not there anymore. So new chefs come in, and that happens all the time.
You know? I would love to have them come on the show and talk, because it's like the Jetsons. Remember the TV show,
The
Jetsons?
Absolutely.
It's like the Jetsons version of a 50s diner.
Well, robotics is coming into the kitchen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then there was some place here in Irv that they sent us a press release, I forgot where, they were having robots flip burgers and stuff. That was their whole pitch.
Flippy?
I don't know.
It is Flippy.
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
And they flip.
Sounds like a cartoon character.
And it does the French fries, fully automated. Yeah. Automation is coming to the industry. There's a lot of players out there that are doing it. It's a lot of R&D, because one of the things that you have to still take into play is, and you know this as well as I know, when you're working around a fryer, and that's where most of this action is happening, around a fryer,
right. You
go home smelling every night.
Mm-hmm.
So don't think that robot's not going to go home smelling every night, but it doesn't get to go home and take a shower. It still needs to be cleaned.
Yep.
And the robots aren't cleaning the robots.
Otherwise it breaks.
They start to stiffen up. I mean, once you put those oils and those greases, grease-laden vapors in the air, they start to stick to things, and they'll stick to the robot.
The mechanical
as well
alarms.
Absolutely.
Talking about cleaning, I'm a friend of a great chef in my hometown, Rouen, Normandy, and I asked him to use his kitchen because I was on a tour with some guests in France and Normandy, and say, "Yeah, you can." It's a one Michelin star restaurant, and a very small place, like 25, 30 seats, but everything is all electric. There's no dishwashing per se line.
Oh my goodness.
It's an armoire.
An armoire?
It's a vertical armoire.
That's the dishwasher?
Yeah. And they put everything,
stack it
inside, they program it, and overnight they wash everything, glasses.
Wow.
I would love to see that. Yeah, that sounds amazing.
Tiny village in Normandy.
And then they come back in the morning, it's all dry, ready to go.
Now that blows my mind.
That would save some pressure.
On space, too.
Yeah, space.
If I were going to take your tour, and we should tout those ones, while you do take people on little private tours back to France to these little villages to see these little Michelin star restaurants with 25 seats in some little village somewhere. That's what we all picture, right?
I'm waiting for the invitation.
I picture those guys cooking on a stove that's been there for 100 years, slavery, and you've just blown my thing. It's all automated and electric.
We did both. But we go to the farmer's market, bring food into, and then we put the menu together. But everything was all induction, all that dishwashing. Because I say, where do we do the dishes? Oh, don't worry.
The robot does it.
Boom, 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 boom. Okay.
In a little village in the middle of France, in the rolling countryside, they're automated.
A dishwashing robot.
A dishwashing robot. So will we ever get to a place where the chef is a robot? Where the chef just cranks this stuff out?
I'm not sure. No, it depends, really.
he makes the sauce, or maybe the robot makes the
maybe in this. Some corporate kitchen.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, good.
As long as you put the information into the chef's the robot chef's head. You have to program it.
You still need a bus.
Yes. So.
Well, we'll see what happens with some of the stuff that. You know, Elon's doing. He's going to have robots making robots.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
If a robot can make a robot, then a robot can cut a bag open and pour something out.
So do you think this is going to be part of the...
And he can even scan it and see the temperature of it. Knowing,
yeah,
I just like, all the safety pieces will come into play. It's going to be pretty amazing.
So, and the question, we're at UCI's Applied Innovation Center. A lot of the applied innovation, the tech they're trying to develop here, it's like a halfway house between the academic world and the business world.
Okay.
They're trying to incubators, accelerators, bring stuff to life, ideas that somebody developed on campus. As they do that, one of the questions, the raging debate in this building is the robot going to replace or is the robot going to assist? Is this going to make it easier and better to do things because the robot will do it for you, the manual stuff, the tedious stuff, or is the robot going to be the creative force that is going to create new something? Who's going to create?
I have a little idea on that.
Okay, yeah. Throw it out. No answer.
The robot is not going to replace the spirit of a kitchen of a restaurant, but it's going to help the entrepreneur.
That's what a lot of people think, because everything is
control, you know, labor control, timing, waste, everything.
Yes,
you know?
Right. So to make it more efficient and with fewer people and more cost effective, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. I think with what Pascal said, I have to agree 100% where you're looking at the waste. Mm. The reason restaurants don't succeed is typically waste. Mm. Volume hides the multitudes of sin. It's a phrase that we use in the restaurant industry.
Say that again.
Volume hides the multitudes of sin.
A multitude of sins. So as long as we're cranking out the front door.
As long as we're cranking food out.
I'm going to make a comment about my own experience. Okay.
So as long as there's a line out the door and the people money going in the cash register, everything you're doing wrong, you're still surviving. But when you start really doing things right and consistent and in control, then you're thriving.
Wow.
Two different things.
Wow. There's a lesson for all of your students at the Saddleback Culinary
Institute. Here's my tip.
Right.
As a restaurant owner or a chef,
right.
when I was in kitchen that didn't own, it was still work if I owned it.
Yeah.
I say hi first, you know, make sure, are you okay, everything's good, don't cut yourself. And
don't cut yourself.
I go on and look at the trash and lift the trash.
Yep.
And if the trash is like 20 pound heavy, that means 20 pounds that I bought
of something and threw it away.
Yeah. Say, what's wrong?
Waste.
You know, did you cut off too much of this? You know, can you use this for the stock? Or can you use that? You know, so if your trash is too heavy, something is wrong. You know?
Can I touch a base on that? So I had a job where I was in charge of a big facility at a theme park, and I did the same thing. They had these red buckets, and I was like, "What is this red bucket? And why is it so full of food?
Yeah.
Why is this food waste here? Oh, they feed the pigs with it." It's like. I'm going to evaluate this. Then the factory that processed that burnt down. Our food cost became like magic. All of a sudden, our waste was very minimal because they had nowhere to throw it anymore. They weren't discarding the same way. They were actually processing and doing what they should have been doing in the first place.
And then you have a lean pig on the menu.
Yeah.
In 10 years that my bar existed, Kelly McHugh's in Mission Viejo, 5,000 square feet, little kitchen. We did $1 million, $2 million a year in gross sales. Most of 80%, 70% is booze. So it wasn't a huge kitchen, but a consistent kitchen. Never once did anybody talk to us about waste. Never once did we think about, never once did we even look at what was being thrown away. To a certain degree, we were already prepackaged stuff and already pre-measured things, burgers and patties and other things. We weren't making it ourselves. But never occurred to me to this moment what we were wasting in that. So it was a line out the door, and we were full, and it all covered up the sins of what we were doing.
Well, at least do compost and have your own herb garden. You know, that's a good recycling there. But, you know, now they do that too with wine. You have a wine cabinet that gives you the right before, they keep the wine yep. longer, fresher for a longer time. And it's
which is why we stayed. You had the wine a guy.
Yeah, last week we talked about
and
it.
And I said we stayed away. This is the 80s and 90s, really the 90s. We stayed away from wine because we couldn't. We lost too much of it. Once we opened it and they didn't drink it, we were throwing it away.
Unfortunately, we're going to lose Wendy. She has
yes,
to
Wendy
go.
Has to go.
Sorry. So
we're
well, I wasn't
cut,
sure.
We're going to cut to a logo here, and we were going to thank. We're going to run a little quick piece here. Wendy can take her headset off here, and she's going to disappear. And we're going to remind everybody that you're listening to OC Talk
Thank
Radio.
Thank you, Wendy.
Right coming. Here at the University of California Thank Irvine's you, Beal Applied Innovation Center. Wendy has to go pick up somebody or go somewhere here. Really what it was, she was offended by the conversation we drove her. She got
And mad. You're welcome back anytime.
No. What an interesting idea. All right, now that we've got Wendy out, let's come back in with, do we call you Chef? Dan, even though you were,
I am not leading anybody in this room. So,
you could be a chef, definitely.
So I always try to refer back to that. I mean, I've had chef positions throughout my career, but with what I do today, I like to be called a culinary specialist because okay. mm-hmm. I think that it's more representative of what I do. But when I'm in the kitchen, I do have respect of the people around me. And when I'm leading them,
you look they like call, a chef.
They
like
call me chef, yeah. and so I'm okay with that. But it's just like any chef, when you're outside yeah. of your environment, you want to be called by your first name.
Right.
Yeah, because like even in your test kitchen, you know.
Like
you,
Reiner hates when I call him chef. We have a common friend, Reiner. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of common friends, but don't call me chef. Don't. It's like you just have to live with it.
So, and here's another question. So, I hope I'm not touting one of your competitors here, but I know I used to have, our studio used to be over across from South Coast Plaza for many years before we came over to UCI here.
Okay,
it was just an office tower, and around the corner, I was surprised to see right next to Sagerstrom Center and stuff were two. Wolf and what's the other big
brand? Fisher and Pickle. Fisher and Pickle.
That was another one there. Yeah, there were two equipment yeah. showcases yeah, for yeah. two specific. So they weren't going through reps like you. They were going direct. They had their own direct showroom. Mm-hmm. Wolf being one of them, and the other one is Fisher. Yeah, I forgot what they do. And I got to go in there once. We got invited OC Talk Radio for a dinner. I thought a dinner at a
yeah.
show kitchen.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, yeah, periodically we have real chef or famous chefs or noteworthy chefs mm-hmm. come in and show off what they're doing with our equipment for maybe for food writers and food shows, mostly for other people who are thinking of buying this equipment. And you come in, there's 10, 15 people, and they show you how we're using this cool piece of equipment to do something. Do you do that kind of stuff?
I do not do it, but I know what you're referring to. We have a brand in Electrolux called Moltini.
Okay.
Moltini is a very, very famous Italian brand that Wolfgang Puck has in his home.
Okay.
So right. what you're talking about right now is it's a high-end home use
right.
of that location that you're speaking of. I'm very familiar with it. And yes, they bring in great chefs who want to remodel their homes. They want to show off. They want to do what they're doing. But it also helps that high-end customer.
Yeah.
It's not always a restaurant. Those are high-end homes here in Orange County.
Yes.
That are putting those into their
They're putting in professional kind of style kitchens and stuff into their house.
Right.
Because they have people like Chef Pascal then come in and cook for them for events and other things.
Yeah. Doesn't always mean it works right.
Yeah. Yeah. And you have to be careful. Also another tip for chef who want to build up a kitchen or buy some equipment. You know, imported equipment sometimes is not NF approved here.
NSF, yeah.
Which is what National Safety Foundation or something. Yeah.
Very important to make sure.
Right.
This is the first thing the department is going to look at.
I would have assumed if it's for sale here, it's already been approved. But you're saying you can
not always.
No.
And the health department say you can't use that here.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, we have a lot of equipment that's coming in from all over the world, not just Europe, but, you know, just all over the world. It comes in on the boats or in the containers, and it's pretty cool stuff. It does some amazing things, but once a health department sees it in operation for service to a customer,
right. There's
a big slap on the hand, and that equipment is shut off and
so
not
so it might be available for
anymore.
Home use. I can put it in my house, but I can't serve the public.
It's not even for that.
Really?
No, it's a touchy subject.
Even if something is called professional, doesn't mean you can use it in the kitchen.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that. I would have assumed if it's been cleared to be sold here, it had already cleared all
the... It's like when you buy something in a grocery store, look at the back label. Mm-hmm. There's always a little note there.
Let's talk about the home market here, because Chef has always bring... I thought we were just going to talk about famous chefs in town here and restaurants and new cool concepts, and we do. But he's brought in people like this one friend of his who's pretty much a professional chef, but he's never worked at a restaurant. He's taught himself. Mm-hmm. He's learned. Yeah. And he puts on these high-end dinners, and he's got high-end equipment in his house. Newport Beach, up and down the coast, there are expensive homes with full-blown wild kitchen. Maybe two kitchens. We did a show design show for a couple of years, and the guy talked about, we're putting in two kitchens. There is the dirty kitchen where the Chef Pascals of the world come in and cook for the special guests, and then there's the daily kitchen or the show kitchen that's sparkling.
I never leave a kitchen dirty.
But the idea is that there's the really where they do the dirty work, and then there's the pretty part of the kitchen that the family sits at and has breakfast or something here. Mm-hmm. So that whole world.
You know why? Because the front kitchen, where you have beautiful equipment, it's usually the gathering of your party.
The island, everybody gets together. Mm-hmm. So you gather around there, so you pretend you're in the kitchen, but the ugly stuff's being done in the backup kitchen in the back there somewhere. Mm-hmm. So do you sell stuff for that too, or do you just outfit professional kitchens?
I'm more in the professional kitchen range. We have items that would definitely qualify for that. But here's what happens. You can't get the installers for them.
Really?
So you have professional installers that will not touch professional equipment going into somebody's home. So you better know somebody that's going to...
I didn't know that.
That's going to go around the rules, because you have what you call the ASAs, that they're authorized service agents. And if they're touching something in somebody's home, that's typically taboo, and it's not something that we
So don't the manufacturers recognize? I'll give you a strange example. So 15 years ago, I started this podcast channel. Nobody knew what a podcast was. And so I went and bought traditional radio mics, like the ones you're using here, that I'd used in real radio stations. Mm-hmm. And now we're in an office building in a podcast studio, not a recording studio or a radio station.
Right.
And so I'd go to the big events, the trade shows and stuff, and they would poo-poo. I'd tell Shure that I'm using their mics in this place, and they'd make fun of me. They didn't want to talk to me. Now you go to the NAMM show, the National Association of Music Merchandisers, where they showcase all this stuff. It's all, they're eager to sell it to the home podcaster, the home recorder, the home do-it-yourselfer here. Mm-hmm. I would think all the kitchen guys would be loving to sell their high-end stuff to the high-end homes.
Yeah, well, you got me thinking right now, because I have what's called the Electrolux Multislim, which is a beautiful electric combi oven, small profile. It's basically the size of that little stand right there, and it's beautiful. It's perfect. It's efficient. It's amazing. It can do whatever you dream up of how you want to cook something. You can set your programs. It's pre-programmed with over 200 pre-programmed recipes in it.
Recipes already programmed in it.
Yeah, so they're already tested and used throughout the world. And it's quite an amazing oven. And, you know, touching base on where we get it, we usually get it in the small cafes, which don't have all that extra room. But going into the home use.
Yeah. Emerald Bay.
Is that what we get in some...
Emerald Bay, it's a great place.
Some of the coffee houses that serve more and more food, they need to have those little ovens that just push.
Yeah, boom. Like your electric... over at Saddleback, you have that electric room. Mm-hmm. I mean, this would have been like that perfect oven where everybody, all the instructors would have been, that's the one we
need. They listen. They're listening.
There you go, Lisa.
We need one, Lisa.
Please. I would think they, just like the professional audio equipment, realizes it's their home recorders, their home podcasters, home people doing. I'm telling you, I know, because they come in here, high-end customers. We had one the other day in here. We had Bill Lyon and his father, Lyon Homes, built Cota de Casa and all that.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know where he lives, but I suspect it's a really high-end home.
And it's a beautiful place.
Yeah. And I bet he's got high-end kitchen, and I bet he brings in high-end chefs on a regular basis to do high-end parties for he and his friends. And we have lots of those kind of people come through here. And I can only imagine what that equipment looks like and what that kitchen looks like. I would think it looks very much like a professional kitchen.
They do.
If I may say something, as a... Do private dinners, beautiful homes, and beautiful equipment. Sometimes there are even French imported stove.
Okay.
Those they weigh like a ton or two.
Yeah, real cast iron kind of things.
You need a cliff to bring them in.
Right.
You need to break the doors to go through.
Right.
No, it's crazy, but it's beautiful, but they've never been used.
Yeah, I find that a lot.
Right, because the people who own the home really don't know how to use this. It's only either to show off or to once in a while use it for a private party.
Mm-hmm.
And it was probably spec'd when they bought the home, or it was spec'd in, because I like wine cellars too. How many of the massive wine cellars, how many of them don't use these things or know what to do with them or don't really buy much wine?
Oh, they're drinking too fast. So.
Yeah. I have a lot of people that I work with, some professional homes out in Summerlin in Nevada,
yeah,
where he put all professional equipment in. And it's stunning just to walk in there. And he is basically owns like 7 drug companies.
Huh.
And the guy cannot cook.
He's, yeah.
And I got to say, and I would love to show you the photo, but I don't want to embarrass him. I'm not going to even say his name. But his first attempt at cooking a roast was on Christmas Eve. And I sent him the recipe, how to do it right, in a combi. And he goes, "What do you think?" And he sends me a picture of it. And he never took it out of the package.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
So I could see all the plastic wrap had sucked back off of the roast. And I go, "Is that plastic wrapped around it?" I didn't hear back from him for 2 days.
Yeah. You're lucky he didn't. That.
He was so embarrassed about not taking the plastic off
it's
of it.
It's oven baked back vacuum.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I would dare say there are tons of very high-end homes that
absolutely
have that same kind of story here.
Oh, yeah.
But there is a market for it.
Absolutely.
And the chef points out, even go down a step from the super high-end homes to the just nice homes, people are cooking at home more than they ever have.
Yeah. So, right. Paul, give me a little idea. Maybe that little combi oven can be here.
Well, we could do. We could cook right here.
Yeah.
I need 3 phase. If you got 3 phase, we'll do it.
All right.
We'll
I'll
come
check
and
it
cook.
Out.
Then next time I bring your chef, say, "Hey, we can finish your cooking here."
You know? 3 phase is what? That's got the ground and everything to it. I forget what my electrical.
I'm not the electrical guy.
You need 3 phase.
I just know what it takes.
There's a vertical, horizontal.
Oh, yeah,
vertical.
Right. Okay. A plug, that kind of, like a real, professional electrical plug. All right, well, we'll get that. We can get that added.
I'm sure you could.
Sure.
This
we
is
got
the right
everything else
for
in
it.
This building here.
Yeah.
Well, you got a lot of great places around this building. I mean, you got some very famous brands right across the street.
Urban Ranch.
I see, Urban Ranch, which is a chef I work with.
But you talk about Chipotle. This is
you got Chipotle right across the street where all the R&D is happening.
Because we're in there. For those that don't know, we're not on campus. We're in the research park behind campus.
Right.
So we're right next to Medtronics, their big facility. Chipotle. What's the big chip maker that's here whose name escapes me now here off the top of my head?
Broadcom.
Well, Broadcom, and there's another one, the New Sky or whatever it is.
Yeah, Henry Samueli and his partner, they have very nice homes and kitchens.
See?
Yes.
Have you seen them?
Oh, yeah. I don't want to throw that out
there.
Well,
we'd love to know
but
that.
But even here in this building is a great event space.
Right.
And
Which doesn't have a back kitchen. All it really is just food prep.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They do big events because the ground floor is an event center where they have the School of Nursing, the School of this engineering stuff, always doing events here, usually from UCI Catering, and all they do is they bring it over and it's
maybe
you know,
something
food prep.
Can be done because you know when
well,
I
take
do,
a look at it.
When I do Let's catering do there, I have to bring my own equipment.
All the time. They always bring their own equipment. There's so there's a room to do that, but there isn't the equipment to do it here.
Yeah.
Why not have it here?
And now it is because with the especially large building, I think you agree with that. You need ventilation, you need a hood, you need... So
that's what prevents restaurants from going into high-end buildings. We're a multi-story building here.
So you got two things about what you're saying, the multi-story buildings and plumbing through it to get ventilation.
Right.
Then you also have historic buildings. Historic buildings aren't going to let
Absolutely.
You touch them or damage them.
Absolutely.
They're not going to let you punch holes through them. So those are some of the reasons that you have what are called ventless hoods that are being put on top of ovens, combi ovens.
And how many
ovens.
High-end restaurants are places like City of Orange or something like that where they're taking old historic homes and they're converting them into restaurants.
Yeah,
and keep them alive.
Part of that infrastructure over there. Fortunately, they already have gas built into them, so they have a ventilation system. If they don't, they have to have the right power to power the electrical.
Yeah, and most of those electrical panels are way underpowered.
They're old, now, yeah. Yes, and so it always becomes a challenge because the chef wants to do certain things. So we really have to mitigate and figure out what equipment profile that we can put in there and what he can get away with, and then it's that whole gauntlet of how do we do this on a daily basis and repeat it and repeat it and repeat right. it day in, day out with the prep and the execution.
Do you ever work with the big food vendors? We're not really much of a restaurant in the old days. So we went to, who else did we go to? Cisco.
Cisco, U.S. Foods are some of the big food vendors. You got Shamrock right now.
Right. And they brought us in and they said, well, here's 50 ways you can make hamburgers. Here we've got 50 different kinds of French fries or something here. And then that led to different choices in equipment.
It always does. It always does. Just like you were talking about your bar itself, it reminded me of a project that I'm working on in Las Vegas where they're a bar and gambling, but they have to serve food in order to do this and have their licensing.
Right.
So, you know, I was sent the menu yesterday. I said, I can do all this except the burger. He goes, the burger's the easiest thing. I go, no, it's not, because I'm not going to put raw meat into a high-speed oven.
Right.
He goes, no, it's already cooked. So just exactly what you're saying.
Right.
It's like
we bought it in portions and patties and all that stuff.
Yeah, it's already pre-cooked. So all I'm doing is re-thermining it and defrosting it and making sure it's at a servable temperature.
Right.
So the menu's now easy.
So, Dan, thank you for all this information.
Fascinating.
Very special. I have a good budget, just hypothetically.
Okay.
Chef's trying to get back in the business again.
No.
I would warn him not. No, you know what? It's a great business. It's just you have to have that passion. Like, real quick story. Yesterday, I was working at a theme park or a nice restaurant, and I saw this chef. I was like, hey, what are you doing here? And I knew he didn't work there because I've seen him at a place called Lugano's in Newport Beach. Lugano's is a very famous jewelry store.
Okay.
Oh, and, yeah, right. And the jewelry store feeds its customers when it comes in. So they only do like 14, 15 covers a day. And
They cook so that they can show you this high-end jewelry. And
correct. They bring you in from anywhere all over the world. The first time I walked in there, I was going in there to do some work. And I'm walking in there to get to the kitchen with Chef Jonathan, I was like looking around. I go, I could have swore I just walked by a Picasso.
Yeah.
And he goes, yeah, that's a Picasso. Yeah. He goes, the owner really likes Picasso.
Do they put engagement ring inside a meatloaf?
Exactly.
You're right, to have
engagement ring in the meatloaf, in the meatball. There. What is
that? That's how I proposed to my wife.
But it's so cool when you see people with passion like that.
Yeah.
And then you remember, this is a great industry. Yeah.
And it points out what Chef has made me aware of through this show. There isn't one kitchen door anymore. There isn't just one path to being a chef, which was you work at a restaurant, eventually you own your own, or you work at a big chain or a big hotel. That was it. Now you have a food truck. Now you're a private chef homes. Now you are a chef at a jewelry store that's bringing in high-end customers, or a hospital like UCI here or something.
Chef for a corporation,
right?
For their executive campus, they
call them BNIs, business and institutions. There's a lot of some of these big mega companies, even like a Facebook. They feed all their employees.
They don't want to go
home. Anderol right over there in Santa Ana. They feed all their employees. They build these
private chef on yachts too. You know. That's another thing.
Yeah. So now these people you're training, these kids that are learning at the foot of the master here, learning how to do what you did kind of just as a kid. You started and then you worked your way up and now you owned your own place. There is a formal training school for this, like didn't exist probably for you. And there's different pathways for those kids to pursue their passion for food.
I may say something.
Please.
I offer because, you know, I don't know if everybody knows, I do teach at Saddleback College Culinary Art.
Right.
And we're working on entrepreneurial class because for that reason, we need to give the future chef, make them aware of what they can do, what they cannot do. What
other than get a job.
Yeah, and then you maybe could be part of the training
as well. That
would be
fascinating. I think they'd love
free training before they jump into the business. You know, it's very important.
And what struck me is how many of the younger kids, you haven't brought in kids that are students yet, but you've brought in people who have learned from you or you've mentored. And many of them have said, I would love to have had my own version of Pascal's with my name on it, but not anymore. Too much money, the rent's too high, the investment's too big. I'll do something else. I'll have a food truck. I'll have a food hall. I'll have a food line. I'll do something. I'll be a private chef. I'll do something else where I can still express my passion and do this without that kind of commitment or cost.
These days, it is scary to have your own establishment.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you plan it well, it sure works. You know? And that's why we have professionals to help you.
One of the things that I've seen with some of the younger generation, just like in the past year, food. I'm gonna derail from food just a little bit and go into beverage. The beverage market.
We haven't even talked about that. Yeah, right.
The beverage market is huge, and some of the young entrepreneurs that I'm seeing that will come in and work with me are starting. Like Agua Fresca in Southern California is just huge.
Right.
You've probably heard the term. I've seen it.
I can't say
it's all over the corners in Santa Ana, every street.
It's amazing. And so I'm seeing this young generation who comes and sees me.
These kind of fresh waters that have some flavor to them. Yeah,
and they want advice on how to do this in a mass scale. And I mean, I just did it like
kombuchas.
Kombuchas.
I went to the Natural Products Food Expo.
Oh, you went? Okay, it was great.
And they had tons of kombuchas there, these fermented beverages that aren't alcohol.
Right.
They can be alcoholic, but they're not necessarily alcoholic. Or non-alcoholic alternatives that are beers and wines and stuff. That's expanding. And
those flavor profiles and what
weird things.
And caffeine. I mean, I just saw Jolt again. I haven't seen Jolt in 40 years.
Yeah.
And now it's on the shelves again.
Right.
But some of those things that they're doing with the Agua Frescas and other flavor profiles, it's just really amazing to see. And, you know, I've talked to Lisa and the team over there about coming in and doing classes and working with people because knowing how to make a great beverage is super important, and it can be very profitable.
And
making that beverage is much more secure than having food spoil.
Go ahead.
They're probably going to be, right now it is, but even a bigger trend coming up.
Yeah. And from somebody who had a bar, it's why we had microbrew beers and stuff, because it set us apart. If you've got that unique flavor profile, those unique beverages that they can't find everywhere else, particularly if it's something they're hearing about, kombuchas or, I don't know, bobas or all these other
things. Paul, I don't want to put an age on you, but mocktail don't exist.
No. All we had was Bud Light and Jim Beam. You know, big flavor profile in most bars.
So for me, in my restaurant, I had beer wine, but my, alternative beer was Foster's.
an Australian lager,
And then once we hit 19, so that was the 88s. Once we hit, 95, then we started getting microbrews.
Yeah.
So I take those microbrews, and people are like, ugh. And they had this feeling or this, that's strong. So I start cutting it with their favorite beer. You drink Coors Light, right?
Yeah.
Cool. And I would cut it with Coors Light.
You drink flavored water.
and basically, then they enjoyed that other beverage. It was too strong at that time.
Right.
You know, now microbrews and IPAs and hazies.
Everywhere.
They're everywhere.
Have you been involved in some microbrewery equipment?
I have a good friend I was meeting with this morning who has a microbrew brewery out in Oak Hills, which is on the 395. His name is Jerry Hackbarth, part of the Hackbarth family.
Because same thing, there's an evolution in the equipment, for the fermentation. It's amazing.
And too many of them, unfortunately, microbreweries have peaked and they sort of come back at ways because they didn't make good beer.
And a lot of it was pricing. They priced themselves out. They were trying to keep up with the Joneses and say, hey, mine's worth $14 a pint. When it was
You know, the problem is a little bit outside of the buck, but the problem is microbreweries make too many kinds. Find out which one are your best seller and just stick to
Don't make 50 of them, yeah.
You know, if you want to make a Budweiser, make it for 100 years, you know.
Right.
So, but
we're coming to the end here.
To a question I started earlier. All right. I have a budget for my own kitchen.
Okay.
And will you come in my kitchen to install it in a semi-professional way?
Would we come in and install it? Well, at the Fisher Group, we had what's called Roadrunner Installation Services.
Okay.
So we can install almost everything and anything with our team that we have.
Okay.
From the beverage end of it to the cook line.
So it doesn't just arrive in a box and then I got to find
No. We I don't want to say it's full service because there's certain things that are specialized, but when it comes to the equipment line and the bar piece of it, setting up your tables and your seating area, all of that can be done. There's specialty things that will happen on the roof that we don't always touch because if you have what's called a remote for your walk-in, that's an AC guy. You really want to use an AC guy so they charge it properly.
But in my day, there were people, I think one was called Beverage Intelligence or something at the time, and they would come in and put in your beer lines.
Right.
They would come in and put in all your taps all the way back to the cooler.
Right.
And they would do all that and design that, and partly because then you're going to maybe use some of the vendors, too. If you use their beer, then they would recommend you.
We do have that. We have a Travis Ferguson who works with us. He specializes in beer. He was with Straub.
Straub was the big one. Right.
Straub for years.
Right.
And if I got that wrong and he's watching this, I'm sorry. But he has built some specialized cases for the Agua Frescas, and it's very unique, and we'll see what happens with that. It's super cool. But, yes, we can do all those types of installs with having Travis and Kevin on our team.
How do they find you? How do they learn more about you? How do they call you?
They can go to fishergroup.com. They'll see it right there.
F, and how do we spell it?
F-I-S-C-H-E-R-G-R-O-U-P.
It's the German way of doing Fisher. F-I-S-C-H.
Yep.
Yes. Fisher Group, and you're up in Orange, and they can come check you out and see all your playground equipment, and we should have Chef Pascal do a demonstration there.
Absolutely.
Sure.
We'd love that.
Why not?
Yeah,
I think that'd be fun.
Bring a few chefs together, and let's cook and have a nice
show the world.
And come next week if you want.
And then we'll do a story about it. Okay. We'll come back and do a story about it. We'll go out and cover it, and then we'll discuss it.
We're doing a St. Patty's Day. In fact, look, I actually tucked this in. Here's a little flyer.
Okay, what's this? Give us
this
again.
This is a Get Lucky with Hatco.
And what is that, a contest or an event?
No, it's just for anybody who wants to come. We have an open house. So the open house is all day long. In the morning, we'll be doing some. We're going to actually bring out that donut robot I talked about. We're going to bring that out. We're going to make some really nice savory donuts and sweet donuts.
That's
we're going
to coming do up both this things. Saturday?
No, it's going to be on March 17th on St. Patty's Day.
So what day is
that? There's a robot.
Tuesday.
Are you going to put a green tag on the robot?
Put green oil on them here.
Green beer.
All right. Yeah. Thanks so much. And Chef Pascal, as always, how do they reach you?
Oh, PascalCuisine.com.
Okay. Yeah. To learn about the catering and the consulting and the teaching.
Pascal, that's on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Number one chef, Pascal, on Instagram.
That's your Instagram handle? Number one chef, Pascal? Yeah. Wow. Only you would have the boldness to claim the number one chef on Instagram here.
Wait, how many minutes we got left?
One or two. Go.
Okay. Here's my story about how I...
Met Pascal. All right.
Real quick. So I was living in Seattle. I was recruited to come back down here and run stuff for Mindavi. Working at Mindavi.
Didn't they have they had a place here in Orange County?
Center.
Orange County. So I was running the production facility, and I needed a production manager to support what I did because of the love, just what it was.
Yeah.
I hired Jeff Knight. Do you remember Jeff Knight?
Yeah.
So I hired Jeff Knight. He goes, I work for Pascal. And I was like, okay, well, I need somebody. And he was great. And then we had a chef, an executive chef, who couldn't make gnocchi. And so Jeff goes, I got somebody. And he goes, we're going to get Raphael. So we took Raphael from you,
we're
too.
We're stealing all his staff. Yeah.
And then Raphael comes and starts working with us. So we're now all working at the Disney. We're working at the resort and with four Mandavi, and we're what's called an operating participant. And so,
because Mandavi had a place on, and within the
the property, yes, it's called the Golden Vine Winery, yes,
yeah,
and that's that's where I met you.
And he still is friends with you after
he
stole all his people?
Well, I didn't tell him until after.
You know, that's why you know how to outsource the wife.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, thank you so much. A fascinating world way behind the kitchen doors.
Yes.
But before the kitchen doors even are opened and before they're designed and laid out and figured out, where do you find it? How do you fit it? How do you feature it? What do you do with it? Lots more choices than I suspect in my day or your day. A lot of choices what can go back behind the kitchen door. Thank you so much for joining us. Well,
thank you.
Thank you, Dan.
All right.
Thanks, Sean.
Well, there you have it. Boy, that's really behind the kitchen door. We're going way down the rabbit hole here, but a fascinating one at that, as we take a look at what really goes into building restaurants these days and what can go in, as there's so much more choices and opportunities with groups like the Fisher Group here. Right here in Orange County's only community radio station, OC Talk Radio, streaming live from our studios here at the University of California, Irvine's Beale Applied Innovation Center.